Hey, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Caps. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about the proposed secondary campus that the Cavs are among the teams that they are pushing for that, it seems like. And we're also going to talk about rivalries. Obviously, we're in a little bit of a weird period with the Cavs right now, but SB Nation, where Evan and I run for the Sword, is doing Rivalry Week this week and next. So it's Rivalry Weeks, really. But on Monday, I wrote about the Cavs' actual biggest rivals, so you can kind of check that out there. We'll have some other stuff coming in the next couple weeks on players and that we hate that we love and players that we love to hate and all that kind of stuff, if you're into that, into some Cavs content. We have some draft stuff, some decision retrospective coming up soon based on the ESPN piece that is airing on Sunday night. We're recording this a little bit before that comes out. And again, book club is later this week. Chapters 1 through 4 of Vintage Cavs is Friday, so please get ready for that. Get those book reports into Professor Demerol. But that's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, how are you on this Sunday?
I'm alright, how are you? Kudos to you for pronouncing my last name correctly. I feel even worse for butchering Mindy's last name last week, so.
Took me long enough to get there. But yeah, you know, I'm good. It's been a lot of like work weekend. Weekend's gone fast. I'm very excited for the 3-day weekend I'll get next weekend due to the 4th. And yeah, we're still in a weird time in the world and things are still
just a bit.
Yeah, just a bit. But it's still a little bit weird. And the Cavs are kind of contributing to that to some degree because there's the report on Saturday from Sam Amick that the Cavs are among the teams in the so-called Delete Eight who are pushing to form a second campus for those teams to train, compete, and perhaps even play televised games. According to Sam Amick, the Cavs, along with the Hawks and the Timberwolves, are among the most, quote, vocal teams pushing for such a format. We've had J.B. Bickerstaff, Colin Sexton, Kevin Love all kind of pipe up about the importance of getting for these teams to get some kind of basketball activity in the coming months. Evan, but when you see this, that they're actually pushing for a full-on second campus and not maybe like the cooperative training camp stuff that we'd kind of seen bandied about in other instances, what do you make of that?
I mean, I'm not surprised. Atlanta was definitely a team that was vocal about being included in the resumption of the season, Cleveland as well. We just know a little bit more personally because we cover this team closely. So you have J.B. Bickerstaff, Colin Sexton, and Larry Nance Jr. all being vocal supporters of it. Kevin Love as well saying it's not really conducive to team building to be inactive for 8 months is obviously not conducive to team building. So, I mean, I'm for the idea. Maybe it's not like games that count. Or even if they are, whatever. I don't know. I worry that it's going to have some type of impact on the draft as well, because I had this fear in the back of my mind the other day that have you been paying attention to the NHL draft, Chris?
No.
Okay, so they did the lottery, and then the first overall pick, they're having a second lottery for the teams that are eliminated in the first round. They get thrown into a pool with Columbus having the best odds. So, like, I was joking, saying, like, the first overall pick is going to be a Flavortown Blue Jacket. So, in all seriousness, though, I did, like, think, like, so a lot of people are upset. So you have, like, teams like fans of the Detroit Red Wings are, like, super upset because their team has been absolute garbage for the last few years, and this is apparently a really good draft class. I don't follow hockey that closely, but, I mean, I just got the general gist of the idea. But I did have this fear in the back of my mind where I thought, like, what if the NBA tries to get cute with something like that where however many through two are all like properly seeded, and then the first one is like a random crapshoot for a secondary lottery for like teams that are eliminated in the first round or like those bubble teams that got kicked out. I'm like, this is something Adam Silver would do, and like that's my fear, but I don't know. As long as it doesn't tamper with the whole draft situation, but as long as it gives teams like Cleveland, like Atlanta, like Charlotte, I mean, the Knicks are hesitant, but oh well. Gives them an opportunity to like develop and not really let the season be a total loss, and you know, so they have a little bit of momentum to build upon heading towards the whenever next season starts, hopefully in December. I'm all for it.
I guess I just don't know how this actually works feasibly.
I don't either.
Like, that's my thing here. It's like, I get the idea of it. I'm very empathetic to these teams wanting that. I thought it was very notable that Michelle Roberts, the head of the NBAPA, basically gave, like, a very, like, I'm not enthusiastic about this statement in talking about this. Like, yeah. to kind of, the main crux of this is, quote, but I'm very concerned, and frankly, my concern aside, our players, our teams are concerned about any in terms of play that doesn't have the same guarantees of safety and health that we provided to teams in Orlando. She basically says, like, that is the standard, and we don't even know exactly how that fully works yet. Like, I don't think we're going to learn anything about this until you get through Orlando, until you sort of see what that actually looks like and everything that goes on with that. And I also just think, like, there's just a lot of concerns to me about, like, this being a feasible thing. Like, where are you going to do it, for one? You know, they talk about the Wolves hosting it, but, like, you know, they've talked about, like, Vegas or Houston. Like, I haven't looked at Nevada specifically, but I know Texas has been, like, one of the major re-epicenters of the coronavirus.
Texas is a hotbed for COVID. So Texas and Florida are, like, the biggest offenders during all this.
Yeah, and, like, I get why you would pick Houston. It's, like, a city people, you could probably have an easier time. It's a popular city, let's say, for different reasons among for NBA players on the road. But, like, COVID cases are on the rise in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think, like, based on seeing how people are acting outside and not wearing masks and things, like, I don't think we're in a situation where people are really, like, taking this as seriously as in other places. If you think about how the Cavs would have to do all of this, and them as just being one of eight teams, like, you know, Jedi Osmond left the country.
Yeah.
Like, is he gonna, like, what are the logistics of bringing him back to do that? Colin Sexton's in Georgia, Darius is in Tennessee, etc. You have to bring everybody back. Like, I mean, you know, there's no incentive for Tristan to do something like this. Like, I don't know if Andre Drummond is going to be enthused about this, you know? Like, there's just, like, a lot of questions that I have, and I can understand you wanting this. And I almost wonder if they're, like, negotiating past what they really think they're going to get, because, like, this is just, like, a big ask. I think this is just in terms of a public health concern, which this is more than a basketball thing to me. I think this is just, like, too big of an ask until we actually see Orlando. And even then, I'm not so empathetic in the sense that these teams, like, they should get something to do, like training camps with other teams that are done safely or something like that. Like, yeah. Maybe, like, the Pistons can come to Cleveland and train for a couple weeks and they can do some scrimmaging and stuff. Like, I'm open to that more so than I am, like, them establishing another bubble.
Yeah, no, I'm empathetic, like you said, to players who are kind of just hosed in the situation. I mean, I guess that's the problem with being on the bottom eight teams, especially if you're Cleveland when you're the worst team in the Eastern Conference.
But you know what my counter to that is, Evan? You sucked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you don't win games,
that's what I'm saying. Like,
you don't have no bargaining power when you don't win games. When you're a joke of an organization, you don't, like...
I wasn't saying that.
I am. Like, the Warriors are, like, the only team of this that are, like...
They're a joke.
Well,
but Chris, they're the luckiest team. This is my aside real quick, because I was thinking about this the other day. They didn't get Andre Iguodala. If they didn't, they were pursuing Dwight Howard instead. That was a game changer for them. Oh, Kevin Durant
team, like, yeah, they're incredibly lucky that they didn't do some certain thing.
Super fortunate. And the fact that, like, that Steph Curry had ankles made out of wet newspaper, that was it allowed them to afford their super team like they did. But forget it. That's a rant for another day. Yeah, no, like, I agree with you in the fact that if you are a bad team, you shouldn't expect to be included with them. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a stretch to include teams like Washington and Phoenix, sure, but
yep,
whatever. Like,
Sacramento, like, what are you doing in Orlando?
Sacramento is they're a little bit less iffy for me. They're a little bit more on the fence for me, so they make a little bit more sense. I mean, the real crown jewel here is to try and get Zion on some TV action just before they wrap things up. And if the Pelicans make the playoffs and they play the Lakers in the first round, then congratulations to them. They get to the sweet release of death at the hands of playoff LeBron. I'm excited for that to be back. But no, I don't really know logistically, one, how it's going to work, because Houston makes abso-fucking-lutely zero sense to me, because like you touched upon, they are a hotbed for COVID, them and Florida are pretty bad, which is, you know, I'm also amazed that the NBA is so good at just sticking their fingers in their ears and yelling la 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 while you bring up the fact that like Orlando is pretty much a hotbed and now they're letting players come and go as they please, and like if they test positive they can't play. But clearly the NBA's prerogative to make money instead of prioritizing player safety is being put on full display here, is what I'm trying to get at. And no, I think I'm more of a proponent of local training camps, maybe later in the summer, like not before, like I don't know, maybe it's like an opportunity for teams, like these bad teams, get like an additional quote-unquote training camp, and it's like a inner squad kind of thing. And like you said, like Cleveland and Detroit make a lot of sense. They're regionally close to each other. Hell, they can go to Michigan State and play.
Well, I don't know if you saw the news out of East Lansing. Buildings. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a bar in East Lansing that 85 people tested positive, and the whole city is now back under self-quarantine orders from the city government.
It's like people are like blissfully unaware about the fact that we're still in the middle of a global pandemic. We're like, yeah, we tried our best for a few months, but you know what? If we're going to die, we're going to die. And a family member of mine said it's God's will, and it drove me up a fucking wall, and it's making me mad thinking about it again. And if you die from this, you die from this. But it's just like when I see those assholes at Town Hall, and Town Hall, if you're listening,
you're the one person we will not take money from.
Yeah,
you
and we will not take campaign. A local. Yeah, for sure. So I see all these people like our age, Chris, that like, as soon as Ohio lifted the act to say like, okay, you can go to the bars, but you have to practice social distancing. Please be safe. If you can wear a mask, please. Like, Ohio's not being hard on enforcing the mask policy, which I'm waiting for them to do it. And I can't wait to watch the fallout and reaction from all the Karens and the Chads out there that are just super upset from this whole thing, that their rights are being impeded upon, but whatever. That makes me so mad. And but to get back to this point, yeah, no. Why would you risk your life or your well-being, especially like in the Cavs situation? Larry Nance has an autoimmune disease. Matthew Dellavedova has a newborn child. Tristan Thompson's children are relatively young.
They're even in the free agents too. It's not like for Thompson and Deli, like they're free agents. Like it's not like they should.
They have zero incentive to play, because if you get hurt, you completely ruin your chances of financial security with your next big check.
Yeah,
like
there's so many downsides. And again, it's a global pandemic that the United States is flatly just messing up compared to the rest of the world. Also, just note that I will say that if this does happen, my preference, if I was a team like this, I would want to be able to have like something after the draft, when you get the reconvene training camp, because I would want to integrate my new pieces. I'd want to jumpstart on that. That's what I would ask for more than like.
So you're saying like after the draft, so the rookie is signed, mm-hmm. like in Cleveland's case, so it would essentially be summer league, but
you get like a bonus training camp for us to help incorporate your young guys. I would rather have that and then do that inner squad thing, like in that kind of setup, than I would playing random televised games to make money for the league in August.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. But you know what might help give the NBA
tell them about Blinkist.
Just stealing my thunder.
I'm fired up today, man. I think about people not wearing masks and acting like this isn't a big deal, and it gets me going.
No, I was grocery shopping yesterday, and I like look at these people without masks on. I'm like, you're such a fucking asshole. But sorry,
that is the official stance of Locked On Cavs, by the way. Wear a mask. Don't be a jerk.
You put it nicely, but let me tell you about the most useful app on my phone. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, like business leaders, are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise, just as long as you wear a mask. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library. From self-help, business, health, to history books, Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you've always meant to read but never had time to. I like Blinkist because it gives me the main points of a book, which helps me evaluate which books I want to make the time to read in full later. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA and try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
Also, guys, I want to tell everyone here about the campaign we're doing here at Locked On, the I Will campaign. The Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. Please do that in your own lives as well. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. After the break, we're going to dive into some Cavs rivalry stuff right after this. All right, Evan, I'm going to just ask you this. I don't know if you've looked at it yet, but
I looked at it.
Okay. So, but when I say Cavs rival, who pops into your head first?
Well, Golden State's a big one, but it'd have to be like his. In our lifetime, at least, it has to be Boston, probably. But like across like the grand scheme of like important Cavs basketball moments, it's probably Chicago. So like you can pick between those three, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's Chicago because I think number one, I think it's Chicago and Boston are one and two. I would say the Warriors are three. The Wizards are four for me, and then the Pistons are five because it's really just a small blip in terms of playoff games, but. Let's just talk about Boston talk about the Bulls, for example, because the Cavs pop up just a very small bit in The Last Dance. It's kind of like a minor
huge afterthought.
Yeah, they're a minor blip in that documentary.
More so, Ron Harper crapping on the
yeah, and then every team that he had was like, "No, that's not how it happened."
Yeah, it was weird.
Yes.
And like Brad Doherty said, he didn't really care about The Last Dance. He was too busy worrying about NASCAR.
What a flex by Brad Doherty.
Just a bit.
But when I think about this, it's the Cavs Bulls history really goes back to the 90s, the late 80s, early 90s Cavs, I think, are the best Cavs team aside from the LeBron era Cavs that we've ever seen. Doherty, Price, Nance Sr., Ron Harper, obviously, for a little bit. Steve Kerr's in there. There's a whole bunch of really Craig Elo. Ton of great Hot Rod, yeah, exactly. Hot Rod Williams is in there. Ton of great players. That rivalry is kind of what keeps them from hitting their absolute the highest echelon that I think they had the talent to do. And then you get into recent years. LeBron's first stint, the Cavs beat them in 2010 4-1 in a first round series, and then in 2015 they meet in a classic David Blatt series. The Cavs win 4-2. Chicago leads 2-1 at one point. The tension ramps up between Joakim and LeBron and all that stuff. There's just like a lot in this rivalry, even though it's like sort of more one-sided than anything else. Really, the Cavs only won in recent years because of LeBron, and the Bulls dominated before that. Regular season games in recent years have been won predominantly by the Bulls, I believe 6 of 8. So it's not like necessarily a back and forth kind of thing. And I don't know how much rivalries totally exist team to team in the NBA now, but historically, this one matters for the Cavs.
Yeah, on one of your points there, I don't really know if there are really rivalries. I know the NBA is trying to force us to believe the Clippers and Lakers are rivals, but I still don't see it. I mean, maybe Kawhi and LeBron more so at that point, just because there is a little bit of a battle there. But let's jump back real quick to Ron Harper. Did you know he was on an episode of Kenan and Kel in the 90s?
No, but that's amazing. That's incredible.
In the episode, Harper, as a Chicago Bull, slips on some orange soda and gets injured, and all of Chicago is angry with Kenan and Kel, who try to apologize. That sounds like a great episode. I might have to cue that one up tonight.
Yeah, is that on the Plus?
It might be. No, does Disney own Nickelodeon yet?
I don't know. I've just assumed Disney or Amazon owns everything.
Yeah, pretty much at this point. Yeah. It's not a surprise, but no, Chicago really is Cleveland's biggest rival, I want to say. Because, like you said, like a lot of the stuff in the 90s and the early 2000s, and then the whole LeBron just beef with Chicago for a while, and it's a lot of it was centered in the rivalry between Joakim and LeBron. And, you know, those two genuinely didn't like each other for a while, and they almost LeBron's time with the Lakers is weird. There's a lot of players that didn't like LeBron for the longest time. They're now his teammate. I'm mostly looking at Rondo, and Joakim Noah almost became one as well. Deion, well, Deion Waiters is a reclamation project. Again, it's LeBron's second attempt at a reclamation project because he tried to help Deion when he returned to Cleveland that first time around. We all know how that ended. But, no, Chicago, like, that David Blatt series, I remember I had so much vitriol and disdain for the Bulls during that series. And even I remember when LeBron first went to Miami, a lot of my good friends and I were just like, I cannot believe I'm rooting for the Bulls. I cannot believe I'm rooting for the Celtics right now. Like, I hate both of these teams so much. And I still don't, as a fan, do not enjoy them. And the Bulls kind of give me, help me breathe easier when I look how dysfunctional the Cavs are and how bad the Bulls have been ever since Michael Jordan left town for the last time. It's a little bit of a relief there. But it's been... it's an interesting rivalry for sure between the Cavs and the Bulls, and I don't know. I good playoff moments too. So like, it's always been enjoyable, and I think more so, at least in our lifetime, Chris, it's always been more so LeBron versus the Bulls, because when he came back to Cleveland, like, it became even more intense, the hatred between those two squads. But it's because LeBron like really harbored a lot of hatred with Chicago while he was with Miami.
Yeah, so one of the things I remember at the time was people talking about how, like, the Bulls were, like, the big threat for those Cavs teams. And, like, I remember a Bulls blogger, like, writing a crazy piece about how, like, Derrick Rose's physicality, like, shut down Kyrie in a fucking preseason game.
Your mic.
I also love a good regional rivalry. I'm pro-regional rivalries. Like, I love that the Cavs and Pacers have some little weird stuff. I love... Like, if the Pistons rivalry could be developed in a more interesting way, I'd be all into that. I'd be pro a team in, like, Cincinnati just for, like, the sake of a rivalry. I love a good regional rivalry. Give me some Midwest angst.
No, I agree. And the Pacers one is interesting because I feel like that also goes back a while, because allegedly Cavs fans were the first ones to start chanting Cheryl Miller's name whenever Reggie started having bad games in Cleveland. So that's why Reggie, like, to this day still has like a deep-seated hatred for the Cavs and just Cleveland sports in general, because apparently he has a bit of a bias when it comes to whenever he's talking about them. Like, he's not very high on who they are and what they are. But I don't know, I'm a fan of Midwest rivalries too, and I think like the Pistons and the Cavs had one for a little bit in that first LeBron era. That was definitely a lot of fun. But no, Chicago, I just, you know, they are kind of the, not in their current state they aren't, but historically they're the premier franchise from the Central Division, and so it feels like it's a little bit more meaningful when you have a bit of a budding rivalry against who's clear, what the team that's clearly the best compared to like Milwaukee, Indiana, and Chicago, or Detroit.
Evan, you know who could help you really fuel up for a Midwest rivalry though?
I don't know.
Built Bars.
Wow, that's right. True.
Built Bars are the best tasting protein bar ever. These are a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They come in 16 amazing flavors. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. They're great for the health conscious guy. They can help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, all the stuff you need to have a successful, healthy diet. And there's a bunch of new flavors coming out. I know they're refreshing their options for you, the buyer, right now. So you have to check out their website and stay up to date on them. But I love flavors like cookie dough, like peanut butter brownie. And peanut butter brownie, for instance, has 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. Again, tons of great flavors, tons of new ones coming. So you want to stay up to date and check them out. Follow them on social, check out their website, make sure you're staying up to date, and they always have great sales. And one great sale is right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com on your first order. Go check them out, let them know you sent us, and support the sponsors that support Locked On. All right, we're going to be right back, talk a little bit about some of the other rivalries going on in the Cavs network right after this. All right, Evan, I'm going to give you again another pick here. I'll link the thing below after it goes up on Monday, but just give me another rivalry you want to touch on real quick as we kind of head towards the end of the pod.
Well, there's two options. I'm going to go with Boston because,
okay,
boy, I hate them Celtics when I watch them. I mean, it was kind of like watching a little brother try and play with their big brother when Isaiah Thomas was leading the show in Cleveland. I mean, that was, or not Cleveland, in Boston, and Cleveland just destroyed them. But there's a lot of stuff here, especially in recent memory. Like, Kelly Olynyk is a guy that if he was traded to Cleveland on an expiring deal, it would be like when Mike Dunleavy was traded here. I was super conflicted at the time. Like, I like absolutely hated Mike Dunleavy for the longest time, and now he was a Cavalier. If Kelly Olynyk ended up with the same fate, I'd be a little conflicted again.
The Celtics rivalry all time is, I think, important for the Cavs for a couple reasons. Number one, in 1992, when the Cavs finally kind of broke through in these semifinals before they lost to the Bulls, they sent Larry Bird out. I learned this today when I was doing some research for this podcast. They beat Larry Bird in a Game 7 in Richfield and beat him in his last career game. This is not like peak Larry Bird, but they ended Larry Bird's career in some ways, which is fantastic. Good for them. I think that's like kind of a cool little footnote for that team. It's a good accomplishment for them. Again, they would go into lose to the Bulls, but it's like this is about the peak of those Cavs teams, and they beat the Celtics coming off that great 80s run they had. In the first LeBron era, the Cavs obviously lose to Boston twice, one in 08, and then again in 2010. And then 2010, of course, is the end of LeBron's... It's one of the most impactful playoff series of all time because of how it ended and what comes after that. With the decision of LeBron and going to Miami. And, of course, they don't meet in 2009 because Orlando kind of plays spoiler to everyone's plans in the East. And then, obviously, the second time around, there is some bad blood, obviously the first year most notably, but the Cavs whooped the Celtics in 15, beat them again in five games in 17, and then have a close series and at the end of the LeBron run, 4-3 in 2018. Where Boston is now, they're obviously much ahead of the Cavs. That's not really like a secret, but I think all time – there's just a lot of big Cavs moments that have happened to happen against Boston, and I think they're just kind of, even though I think it's probably more the Cavs view them as like an all-time important rival than the other way around, I do think it ultimately matters.
I agree, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit and just ask you this. In 2018, did you have any fear in your mind that Boston was going to knock Cleveland out and it was going to be Boston, Golden State, the NBA Finals that year, or were you like 100% certain that LeBron would carry them?
Having seen what LeBron did against the Pacers that year, I was convinced that they were just going to get through, but I didn't think it was going to be like an easy thing because I think LeBron was just doing whatever he needed to do.
I mean, it's also funny to think, and if you want to take one series step back there, how the Cavs just humiliated that Toronto Raptors team where everybody was saying like, okay, this Raptors team's going to just end LeBron's run with Cleveland. Like, it's been fun. LeBron's going to the Lakers, blah, 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 like all this other stuff. But no, they crushed Toronto for old time's sake. But no, I had my fears at times because that Boston team was super young and they were super talented. And once they were able to get into the Cavs' craw and, you know, build a little bit of confidence and know what it's like to win in Cleveland and against Cleveland, that definitely had me nervous. But yeah, no, that Indiana, that Pacers squad was a really bad matchup for the Cavs that year. I was with Cavs Nation at the time, and I wrote like a playoff preview saying like, no, this would have been like the worst first round draw for Cleveland because they struggled with Indiana the entire season. And I remember I went to game 5 of that series, and the tickets were super cheap because everyone was convinced like, okay, well, the Cavs are dead in the water, like there's no chance they're going to come back and win this series. But you know, they pulled it out in the 7, but that was agonizing to watch. And then Toronto was a breath of fresh air, and I think for me, Boston was just like, oh no, here we go again, like the Cavs have no chance. And then they get to the NBA Finals, and I thought, they're just happy to be here at this point. I mean, not LeBron, but like a lot of those players.
Yeah, but that series was not easy, and I felt like it was also like weird because obviously Isaiah's not around at that point, and then like Kyrie's not playing for Boston at that point. It just didn't feel like the version I would have wanted to see of that either.
No, was that the series where Jason Tatum, that picture of Jason Tatum as like a young Jason Tatum, was that like one of LeBron's camps and said like he was like his biggest idol and stuff and like asked for his autograph and all these other things?
Yeah,
and, like, LeBron
I think
would
so.
Acknowledge him. See, it's like some petty stuff like that. Maybe it's LeBron doing his like mind games to like, it's like Michael Jordan coming up with like every type of slight imaginable to help motivate him and pump him up for a game. Like, this was LeBron trying to do some psycho shit like that. But no, it was just a weird time. Like, 2018 was weird. But like the first time, like when Isaiah Thomas had that hip injury and the Cavs knocked him out, and then when J.R. Smith and Kendrick Perkins ruined Jay Crowder's life, and I kind of understood why Jay Crowder didn't want to be here playing with JR and in Cleveland, because Jay Crowder was like not my favorite Cavalier, but I did feel bad at times because I liked what he brought to the table, but clearly like just did not want to be here. But just a weird, it's an interesting rivalry, but it's kind of like a passing the torch moment too, because LeBron could not get past Boston his first time around, and like that's part of the mostly the biggest reason why he signed the Heat, because he didn't know how to get past the Celtics squad, and then like learning how to win with the Heat kind of helped the Cavs long term. So yeah, everything kind of happens for a reason, as every cliche white mom would say, and it's just the same thing. But like this, it was a fun rivalry, and I feel like, I don't know, if Cleveland becomes relevant again and Boston is kind of maintaining their relevancy with all the star power they have now, it'd be good for the NBA, at least in my mind, in the Eastern Conference, for those two to be rivals like again on a meaningful level.
Yeah, I also just say the last rivalry, just on to mention a weird one, is Cavs Wizard is one of the weirdest things ever when you look back at it, but it's amazing. Oh, yeah, and I love it.
Boy rivalry.
Yes, and I actually have to go back and remind or put in, well, a Jay-Z rapped over the Bull the Whistle instrumental, which is amazing. Yeah. Just Deshaun Stevenson.
Of all players.
Now it'd be like, you can only hear this on like Tidal, but stuff's on Spotify and stuff now, so whatever. But
hey, Soulja Boy is a video game tycoon. Before we go, have you seen the shenanigans he's been up to?
No, I have no desire to know what Soulja Boy's up to in
so Europe, what he Lord. Does is he buys like bootleg video game consoles from China and then like slaps his logo on it, and then he's just like, oh, I sell these like Soulja PSPs or whatever you want to call them, and then they have like a bunch of preloaded like Nintendo copyright games, and then he like tweeted like just basically saying like, fuck Nintendo, they don't scare me, and I'm like, eh, no, these are like the worst lawyers in the world. And then like no, he's still going. He just released a handheld in January of this year called the Soulja Watch, it's the Soulja game handheld, and looks extremely similar to the PS Vita, which is funny. But yeah, no, of all players, Deshaun Stevenson, and not a guy I'd want to like link my wagon to, especially when you're a one-hit wonder like Soulja Boy. So
yes, and then the other thing about that is Damon Jones is the game winner in LeBron's first playoff series to win the series. The pizza thing, like Gilbert Arenas is a very existence in that. You know, they play threes in a row, the Cavs win all of them. You know, it's just wacky and a very fun little blip in LeBron's career. I wish it was back a little more enforced now, but that is what it is.
Would you bring those Wizards uniforms back?
What?
Would you bring those Wizards uniforms back?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, good call.
Yeah. No. And also worth noting, the Cavs played the then Bullets at the Miracle of Richfield in 75. So these teams have been connected for quite a while. Kind of a fun little anecdote I found while researching this. But or remembered, I guess, while researching this. But that's going to be it for today's show. Evan and I will be back in various forms this week. He's going to be doing a draft crossover pod with the folks in our next mock. I have a guest coming on to talk about the decision 10 years later and kind of the ESPN thing that came out on Sunday that you can check out from Don Vanetta. We have the book club again coming back this week. A whole bunch of really fun stuff. Some fun series coming up as well at Fear the Sword. So please check that out. And thanks for listening. Thanks to our sponsors, Blinkist and Built Bar. And we'll talk to you soon.